Welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host, Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to kick the regular NFL season off. Charlie, are you excited?
We have an exciting week, too. It's season preview week at the Inquirer, which is our Super Bowl almost. So the week's been off to a good start from our perspective, I'd say.
Yeah, so much good stuff on Cincinnati.com, our season preview section. We got you all covered on anything you want to know about the Bengals heading into what is hopefully going to be an exciting season, but there's no shortage of storylines. So let's just start with the matchup this weekend, that is the Bengals taking on the Vikings. The Vikings last year kind of had a down year in their eyes. Mike Zimmer, the head coach who Cincinnati Bengals fans know very well from his time here as a defensive coordinator, but the Vikings last year defense was not good. Offense didn't live up to the expectations. And up there in Minnesota, they expect to be in the playoffs every year. So what are you anticipating to see from the Vikings on Sunday?
The Vikings and the Bengals are two teams that are kind of similarly at a crossroads in a sort of make or break season. Mm-hmm. And the Bengals' strengths and weaknesses align really interesting with the Vikings' strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. You have to start with the running game and the wide receiver duo that Minnesota has with Dalvin Cook and then with Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen at wide receiver. Those are three players specifically inclined to target some of the weaknesses the Bengals had last season. One, stopping downhill runners, and two, stopping explosive wide receiving threats over the top of the field. We are going to know right away how well the Bengals address those two weaknesses with the investments they made on their defensive line and with the depth they prioritized in the secondary. Whether or not the Vikings stars are able to play like stars in a lot of ways could be a barometer for the entire season for the Bengals.
Yeah, there's no shortage of stars on this field. Like you said, they kind of enter this season with similar expectations. But when you go through the Vikings depth chart, Danielle Hunter, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr, Patrick Peterson, Harrison Smith, Bashaud Breeland, that's just on the defense. So then on the offense, you've got Justin Jefferson, who we'll talk a lot about. There's an interesting thing on the line this weekend between Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. I'm going to tease it, but we'll get to it. Dalvin Cook, one of the NFL's best running backs. And then Kirk Cousins, who he gets knocked for it, but he's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of consistency. So I think what I'm really interested to see this weekend is I think the Bengals are more talented on offense. I think the biggest matchup that I'm looking forward to seeing is how the Bengals defense looks against this Minnesota offense, because I really think if you are able to stop Dalvin Cook, everything starts with him, especially in that Kubiak wide zone offense. I think if you're able to stop Dalvin Cook early and they're not able to get the run game going and Cincinnati's offense is able to get some points going, Minnesota doesn't want to have to start throwing the ball down the field. They like to have that balance between the run and the pass. And I think if the Bengals defense can show that they've made those improvements in terms of run stopping and their pass rush is able to get going a little bit, I actually think the Bengals across the board are a more talented team than Minnesota. But I think the biggest questions I have come from the Bengals defense versus this Minnesota offense, because I'm not really worried about what the Bengals offense is going to do.
Yeah, and I said the strengths and the weaknesses of the Bengals and the Vikings align in interesting ways. And I don't think Minnesota's offensive and defensive lines both are going to be the toughest test the Bengals will face over the first eight games. So it's important that both of those units get off to a strong start as well, because this won't be the toughest competition that they'll be facing in this early part of the season. There's no Khalil Mack yet. There's no Myles Garrett yet. And on the offensive line, there are, you know, some of those units on the flip side, like for example, the Browns or other teams the Bengals could face early in the season. They are going to have a chance to get off to a strong start on both lines. So they got to take advantage of it, because the schedule gets off to a kind of easy start. And if they don't get off to a strong start and win those matchups early, well, then again, that could be a barometer for the way the rest of the season could go.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about specific matchups we're both looking forward to seeing and what are going to be the critical ones of the game. So let's start with the Bengals offense. as I mentioned before, Patrick Peterson, a big name to watch this game. Obviously, I mean, how many LSU Tigers are going to be on the field between Patrick Peterson, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Joe Burrow? I mean, if you like LSU, this is your game to go to. But the reason I bring him up is because he's supposed to bring a lot of veteran leadership. But I'm very curious to see, and I totally respect all that Patrick Peterson's done in his career, if he still got enough behind him to slow down Ja'Marr Chase, Tyler Boyd, and T. Higgins. I think that that will be an interesting matchup to watch because you got to go with the young guys that the Bengals have. But at the same time, Patrick Peterson's a future Hall of Fame quarterback.
And Ja'Marr,
I mean, cornerback.
Yeah, and Ja'Marr Chase made it seem like he'll be going up against Patrick Peterson a lot. Mm-hmm. And while Patrick Peterson isn't at his peak right now, I think he's the perfect first test for a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. Because I do think Patrick Peterson still has some of the speed and athleticism to track Chase down the field. But he's not going to be as good of a contested catch, pass breaker, upper as he might have been at one point. So it's not like he's going up against Denzel Ward, Ja'Marr Chase, to start off his NFL career. It's a winnable matchup against a cornerback who's going to be doing a lot right. And for all of the conversation we've had about Ja'Marr Chase, it's going to be a matchup that he is capable of winning. And now the question is he up to the test from his first NFL game? And what does his role look like in his first game with the Bengals?
Well, I can tell you what I hope they hope it looks like. That's explosive plays. And you actually asked Zach Taylor about this, and he was very candid in his response. What did you ask Zach about Ja'Marr Chase's role in the offense?
Yeah, so I went back and counted. It's come up 27 times since the start of the 2020 NFL season.
That is some dedication right there, Charlie, to go back and count that, by the way.
That the Bengals have mentioned the need to get more explosive plays. Since the start of training camp alone this season, it's come up 15 more times. And a lot of that emphasis was a huge part of the reason that the Bengals were such strong believers in Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. They believed that if they could stretch the field, and also if they could add a receiver who could get a lot of yards after catch, that would, number one, open up the run game in a significant way, two, be able to mitigate some of the weaknesses on the offensive line, and three, unlock the next step in the next progression from Joe Burrow. A lot of that, again, comes down to Ja'Marr Chase being the guy the Bengals drafted over Penei Sewell. The question is, despite the subpar training camp and preseason from Ja'Marr Chase, is he still up to the task for week one? Again, I think Patrick Peterson is going to be a really good measuring stick for where Ja'Marr Chase is at right now, because they need that for the offense to be better than it was last year.
Yeah, and before we move on and start talking about other position groups, I think it is worth talking about on this podcast about something that really stood out to me. I've been covering the NFL for 8 years, and I've seen a lot of players approach media press conferences in different ways. Some shy away from tough questions, some embrace them head on. Ja'Marr Chase's drops and struggles in the preseason and training camp have been well documented. And you can say it's rightfully so. He was a number 5 overall draft pick. He was one of the greatest players to play in college football. The spotlight, he knew, was going to be on him. And he struggled to catch the ball at times. But I thought what stood out to me and is maybe a vote of confidence for Bengals fans asking, should I be worried about Ja'Marr Chase? He answered questions, and I wrote a story about it on Cincinnati.com if you want to check it out and learn more about this. But he answered questions for 15 minutes. He answered every single reporter's questions and never once got snippy, never got angry, and literally put the onus on him at all times. When asked, why are you dropping the ball? He said, lack of focus. Lack of concentration. He didn't try and make excuses for himself. He did say he thinks that not playing last year has had a little bit of an impact on him. But from a maturity standpoint for a 21-year-old, I think that showed that he's going to get through the bumps and bruises that come with being a rookie. And I think he's made up of the right stuff where it makes sense why Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow have repeatedly said they're not worried about Ja'Marr Chase and his mentality.
I mean, this was the biggest bet the Bengals made, mm-hmm. that Ja'Marr Chase was going to be that guy, and he has to be that guy for it to be worth the number 5 pick overall in the draft and worth going at wide receiver, mm-hmm. instead of one of the more glaring needs on the offensive or the defensive line. So it's one of those parts, too, where You know, you don't really have a choice at this time. This is who you are. This is who your identity is. And regardless, Ja'Marr Chase has to play a big role.
Yeah, and speaking of Ja'Marr Chase, I teased it when we first started this segment, but I wrote a feature on Cincinnati.com about the relationship between Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. We just talked about Justin Jefferson, the Vikings star wide receiver, played together with Joe Burrow at LSU.
I heard that team was pretty good.
We're both a part of that 2019 national championship. And I mean, you could argue they were one of the greatest teams to ever play in college football. But Justin Jefferson was number 22 overall pick. Ja'Marr Chase is the number 5 overall pick. The expectations are incredibly high for both guys. And Ja'Marr Chase has picked Justin Jefferson's brain about how he was able to have that very, very great rookie season. And their relationship goes back to them going to get slushies at 7-Eleven, where Ja'Marr calls it a slushie. Justin Jefferson calls it an icy. They debate it to this day. I don't know. What do you think?
I think slushies or icy? And icies are different drinks.
Okay. That's interesting.
Icy is the solid ice where the ice is the heart of it. Slushy has that liquid consistency.
Okay. I gotcha.
They're different.
So if you go to 7-Eleven, Charlie,
7-Eleven has slushies. Getting a,
okay. Okay. So you're more on Ja'Marr Chase's side of this argument.
Okay. Team Chase, one could say.
But back to their relationship. Joe Burrow actually said that the gritty dance that you saw Justin Jefferson kind of make go viral last year after touchdown celebrations was actually started by Ja'Marr Chase, who told me, yes, he wants the Bengals to win first and foremost because that's what he cares about. But he's actually wanting to score first because he wants to be the first guy and the only guy to gritty on the field. So we'll have to stay tuned and see if that happens.
The game within the game.
Yeah.
These are the real storylines.
Yes, these are the storylines that we care about. So we're also going to talk about the Vikings linebackers. In my opinion, that is where they're strongest. And I bring this up because a big storyline for the Bengals heading into the season is what is going to be Joe Mixon's role in the offense as the all-purpose back. We obviously know the Bengals moved on from longtime running back Giovanni Bernard. It's now Joe Mixon's show. He obviously was the number one guy the last couple of years, but there's nobody coming in that's going to play an even bigger role at running back than him. And he's apparently made a lot of improvements, according to Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, about being a pass catcher. And when I talked to offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, he specifically brought up Joe Mixon as a player he's very excited about because of the improvements he's made. And he said, the more you can do on the field and get this guy on the field, the better it is for us. And I think what a better litmus test to see how far Joe Mixon has improved than going up against a linebacker group like Minnesota has that's kind of able to run sideline to sideline and really shut down an opponent's run game.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of covering professional sports is they tell you who they want to be. And with the moves the Bengals made this offseason, they told you how they see Joe Mixon. So whether or not he is ready for an expanded role in the pass game, whether or not he is an improved pass protector compared to what he was last season, the Bengals have pushed all of their chips onto that table. The Bengals, with who they are structurally, by getting rid of Giovanni Bernard, by not bringing in a more established backup running back except for Samaje Perine, they told you that Joe Mixon has to be that guy for them this season. Otherwise, kind of like Ja'Marr Chase, there's no other way. This is who their identity is. The results have to come because that's the bet they made.
Yep, and that's going to be something that I'm in particularly really curious to see, as I'm sure you and everyone else is that's been covering this team for the last couple months, because it's all we've been heard about. And it's so funny because we talk so much about Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and Joe Burrow. It's almost like sometimes Joe Mixon's forgotten, but it's like, how do you forget about Joe Mixon? He's one of the best running backs in the league. So I think watching him and seeing how that Bengals offensive line that we've talked so much about has improved, I think that's going to be a major storyline in this game. And for me, those are the really like key matchups that I'm looking forward to seeing how they play out. Is there any particular matchup that you're interested in seeing that you think might be critical to the Bengals' success in this game?
I mean, the offensive line, probably pretty important.
Are you going to say that every week?
again, though, like the Vikings don't have an elite pass rush right now. So I guess my overall question is, who is the weak point of the offensive line this season? We probably won't get the answer of how good will the Bengals offensive line be against Minnesota. But I'm very interested to see this year who's the guy teams are game planning against. Mm-hmm. Last season, for example, that was a lot of guys like Myles Garrett on the right side lining up against Bobby Hart and whoever was the Bengals right guard early in the season. Those guys like Billy Price and Xavier Suafilo got hurt. They had Fred Johnson there, I believe, for time to time. So this season, where do they really strategize and funnel their top pass rushers? Who are they trying to go up against in that big way? And then, like, have the Bengals done enough at that spot to combat that?
Yeah. I thought it was very interesting. I referenced my conversation with Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. He brought up Riley Reiff, the addition. And for Bengals fans who maybe didn't follow the offseason as closely, the Bengals, one of the biggest free agent additions was Riley Reiff outside at tackle. They think that his leadership that he's brought to that offensive line, you almost can't put a price tag on how much of a value it has been for the Bengals. They feel so much better about the offensive line because of two reasons: Riley Reiff and a healthy Jonah Williams on the outside. And when you've got two bookends on your offensive line that can give you that much confidence, I think those are two players, if you're looking for people to really keep an eye on, those tackles playing outside. I know there's been a lot made of the Bengals guard situation, but I'd really like to see if those two guys live up to what Brian Callahan has talking about with them.
I think the Bengals have done enough at tackle. That was the whole talking point. Drafting Penei Sewell probably would, or Rashawn Slater would have had to slide into guard. I do think the Bengals have done enough at tackle. Jonah Williams, a pick who has reached in my evaluation expectations while he's been on the field, and is someone who just internally there's a lot of confidence in. And then Riley Reiff, who I think was the best free agent tackle to change teams in March. So now again, the focus turns to the inside where it's been all along. How much are they going to, are teams going to scheme more inside now that there's no Bobby Hart to kind of beat around the outside?
Yeah, there's just, we could talk about this matchup for hours, but before we wrap things up, I want to ask you a question, and we'll do this every week. On offense, name one player, and on defense, name one player who you think is critical to the Bengals being able to win.
All right, so
kind of put you on the spot. I did not tell Charlie we were doing this before.
On defense, I think there's a pretty easy answer, and that's DJ Reader. There's one game I keep going back to from last season. It was week 2 Thursday Night Football against the Browns. And Cleveland obviously has a great rushing attack, and the Bengals were down 35-30 with about 4 minutes left. If they got a stop, they would have gotten the ball back. The offense was rolling. I think they would have won that game if they would have gotten one more stop. And what happened? Well, the Browns kind of just shoved the ball right down the middle of the field, and first down ball game. How much better are they prepared and more well-equipped for that situation this year? I think that starts with DJ Reader and the expectation that he takes a step forward to fill the role they saw him playing when they signed him. On offense, you know, I'm still buying all the T. Higgins stock. I still think he's going to be their number one receiver this season. How much do they turn to him right away? How much does he look ready for that role right away? How much healthier is he recovering from that hamstring injury that he did throughout last season? I think he could be their most exciting player, and I think that could start against a Viking secondary from the jump.
Okay, well, I'm going to pick two different people, and I'm not just picking them so that they're different than yours. On defense, I am going to go with Trey Hendrickson. He was one of the best in the league at getting to the quarterback last year. He needs to be that. And I know a lot of coaches will tell you a pass rusher and a defensive end is not simply just judged based off their sacks. That's not how I see it. At the end of the day, when you are a pass rusher, the first stat you look at is how many sacks do they have. The Bengals paid Trey Hendrickson to be their guy coming off the edge. He needs to replicate a similar type of success that he had last year in New Orleans for the Bengals defense to be better than they were last year, because I don't know who that second main pass rusher is going to be. So yes, it's going to be a lot on Trey Hendrickson, but from what I've heard in talking to Zach Taylor and Sam Hubbard about him, he is someone that the team has really rallied around, and he's got some leadership capabilities to him, and he's a very hardworking guy. So I think he needs to have a big day on Sunday against Kirk Cousins, because I put my money on if Kirk Cousins gets agitated and bothered early on, I don't think he's going to be able to see his way through that. So Trey Hendrickson is my key for the game. And then on offense, I think I'm going to be looking straight at Tyler Boyd, because I think we've talked about the Patrick Petersons of the world and the Harrison Smiths and the plan that the Viking secondary is going to have to focus almost, I think, on T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase so much that I think Tyler Boyd, as it could be all season long, is kind of going to be the player who just sneaks up and you forget just how good he is. And I think he's got to have a big day and be the Bengals' main receiving target on Sunday, because I think those two guys on the outside are going to get so much attention.
I'm actually going to switch mine, because I think that's the right answer, Tyler Boyd. The way I understand the Vikings depth chart too, their starting slot cornerback is Mackenzie Alexander, yep, former Bengal starter last season. And I'm pretty confident you can beat Mackenzie Alexander on a crossing play in the slot. I'm pretty confident in that. Tyler Boyd obviously is one of the top slot receivers in the game. That will probably be a matchup the Bengals know they can turn to.
Again, it's almost like, how do you forget about Tyler Boyd? But that's a great problem that Zach Taylor has, is he's got so many players to make his game plan around. So I'll be very curious to see how that all shakes out on Sunday. Well, Charlie, we gave our takes on what we think about this game, but how about let's hear from a guy named Eric Smith, who covers the team for the Vikings on an everyday basis, like we do for the Bengals, for Vikings.com. Eric's going to give us a little bit of his thoughts and, you know, some insight on what Bengals fans can expect from the Vikings in a more in-depth process. So, Eric, we're going to bring you in right now. So, Eric, the Vikings are heading into a season in which Mike Zimmer wants to be very different from last season. You know, I feel like he isn't shy about his expectations, and he was vocal about his displeasure with the defense last year. And obviously we know the Vikings have a high standard in that organization to be, you know, playing for a contention postseason every year. So when you've been watching this team over the last month, what have been your main takeaways about how this team looks going into this season?
Yeah, thanks, Kelsey, and I appreciate you having me on. I think the turnaround that Zimmer is looking for begins and ends with his defense. And you mentioned last year he was not happy with the defense. I don't think anyone was, because probably for the first time ever under Zimmer, he had a bad defense. And Zimmer is known as a defensive guru, just like a defensive mastermind who always somehow finds a way to have a good defense. And that was not the case in 2020. They were bad. They were injured. They lacked depth. Pretty much anything you can think of, it was bad. And as a result, the Vikings went all in on defense in the offseason. They signed Patrick Peterson. They signed Xavier Woods. They brought in Bashaud Breeland at cornerback. So they kind of revamped the defense. And along with that, they're getting guys back who missed time with injury last year. Obviously, Danielle Hunter is at the top of that list. Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks. So it's the same scheme. I think there might be a little bit of tweaks in the scheme, but the faces and the players, it seems like half the defense is new. And that's really what Zimmer is banking on to be good, because we found, you know, this is going to be Zimmer's eighth season. We found that when the defense is good and the offense is adequate or good too, then that usually leads to a playoff berth. And when the defense is not good, that doesn't really lead to success. So it's gonna be all about the defense this year. You know, Zimmer probably expects them to be a top five defense. I mean, he has high expectations for them. And if they can do that, then it'll probably be another playoff appearance for us up here in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think it's all Bengals fans can say, it's kind of weird to not see Mike Zimmer's defense be elite. Because as you know, they saw Mike Zimmer here as a defensive coordinator for years, and the Bengals defense was always good. He's such a well-respected defensive coach. So staying on the defense, let's talk about it. You were talking about those additions that the team made, but I want to talk about one in particular who
Do we have a count of how many LSU Tigers are going to be on the field on Sunday? Because with Patrick Peterson now, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, we'll get to all of that later. But Patrick Peterson is, I've read, is almost like he's had a rebirth in Minnesota. What do you think the addition of Peterson has done for this Minnesota defense? And what are you anticipating his level of play to be like this year?
It's a little bit of an unknown with Peterson because he didn't play at all in the preseason. And so we haven't seen him in a game, you know, since last year, I guess, when he was still with Arizona. He's looked good in training camp, and that's good because, you know, he's mostly gone up against Jefferson and Adam Thielen when they've been on the field and been healthy. I know Jefferson was banged up for a few weeks, but he's looked pretty good in camp, and he's drawn a lot of praise from Mike Zimmer, saying that he's kind of come in and picked up the scheme and been a good teammate and is a leader. You know, I think his leadership is what has sort of stood out the most. Like, the Vikings have a couple of young cornerbacks, and it seems like every practice they're just hanging around Patrick Peterson trying to soak up any ounce of knowledge they can. I think what's important with Peterson, I don't think anyone expects him here to be, you know, an all pro that he was, you know, early in his career, because he is, you know, on the other side of 30 now. But the Vikings also need him to be somewhat good as well. Like I mentioned earlier, they signed Bashaud Breeland. They brought back Mackenzie Alexander, who oddly enough was with the Bengals last year just for one season. But it's Peterson's group at cornerback, and he is the clear leader at that group. So he needs to play well, because behind Peterson, Breeland, and Alexander, there's not a ton of depth or star players, you know, kind of high quality guys. So if Peterson can't play well and that group struggles, that's kind of going to affect the whole defense. So that's why they're kind of banking on Peterson to play well, be a leader, and like I said earlier, kind of help turn this defense around of where it was a year ago.
Yeah, you can never have too many corners, as they say. So let's talk about the offense a little bit. Obviously, Justin Jefferson's first year in the NFL was well documented. He just absolutely crushed, I think, anyone's expectations for him. Almost 90 catches for 1,400 receiving yards. He's very good friends with Ja'Marr Chase. He has been mentoring the Bengals' first-round pick a little bit. And, I mean, if you're Ja'Marr Chase, why would you not call your buddy Justin Jefferson and say, what did you do to have that type of rookie season? So I can do exactly that. But what are your expectations of Justin Jefferson in his second season playing with Kirk Cousins, Adam Thielen? And do you think he's going to have an even bigger role with Irv Smith not being in the offense with that injury he suffered?
Yeah, the Irv injury is tough because he was probably the best player in camp. And the Vikings have a lot of big-name, high-end guys on their roster. But to me, Irv was maybe at the top of the list and guys who were just really looking good and really ready for a breakout year. But, you know, Jefferson, he had kind of a shoulder injury in early August, and he missed a few weeks, and he didn't play in the preseason either. But before that, I would have put him right up there with Irv in terms of guys who just looks fantastic. And that's good to see because, you know, you wonder, okay, you came in and just lit it up as a rookie, like you said, but then how are you going to respond? And to me, he seemed even better than he was a year ago. He looks a little bit faster, and you could tell he was more comfortable and more confident. And that probably comes with, you know, not being a rookie anymore. But as for how he's going to do, I mean, it's going to be tough for him to eclipse those numbers that he had a year ago just because they were so good. I mean, like you said, I think 88 catches, 1,400 yards, 7 touchdowns. Defenses are not going to just leave him one-on-one. I firmly believe that he's going to get shadowed, you know, safeties over the top. He's going to get double covered a lot. And that's sort of how it goes in the league. Like, if you're a top-end guy, you're going to get a lot of attention. So I don't want to say his numbers are going to be good or the same or better, because it's going to be tough to top that. But I think even if he doesn't have the same numbers, he can still make the same impact and still be good. Because you mentioned Thielen and, you know, we haven't talked about Dalvin Cook yet. The Vikings do have a good array of skilled players. So if you focus too much on Jefferson, there are other guys that can hurt you. So defensively, they're going to have to kind of figure out, okay, who do we want to take away today? If they take away Jefferson all year, he's still going to get some catches, but then you got to account for Thielen and Cook and other guys. So, it's going to be interesting to see how defenses kind of approach that all year. But I think Jefferson will be fine. He's confident. He's such an easygoing guy, very, very likable, always got a smile on his face. And I think he's ready to kind of prove the doubters wrong again at the end of year two.
Well, before I let you go, I do have to let you in on something that Jamar Chase shared with me, and that is Sunday is all about getting the win for both these teams, right? The Bengals want to start their season off 1-0. Obviously, the Vikings have the same hopes as well. But I will tell you that Jamar Chase has a little added edge to him because, according to Joe Burrow, it was actually Jamar Chase who brought the gritty to LSU, and Chase wants to gritty first and show off his twist to the gritty before Justin does. So he said, I got to score first.
You know what? That's probably going to be a good storyline to watch. If you ask Justin up here, he'll tell you that he was the one who introduced the gritty because that's kind of taken off for him. I mean, it's in Fortnite, the video game. He's, you know, that's definitely his like signature move. I mean, to me, when I think of the gritty, I think of Justin Jefferson and not Jamar Chase. Sorry, Jamar. But, hey, I think whoever scored the touchdown first will, you know, have the honor of doing it. I'm probably biased, but hopefully Hamara and it's JJ.
Yeah, there could potentially be seeing a lot of grittying all over the field at Paul Brown Stadium. But for us, that would be so much fun to watch. Eric, thanks so much for joining us and look forward to chatting with you on Sunday for the big game as the NFL season kicks off with the Bengals taking on the Vikings.
Okay, Kelsey, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Eric for joining us and getting us some more information about the Vikings. I thought some of the stuff he said was really interesting, and I'll certainly be looking for some of the things that he highlighted. And for the segment we know you've all been waiting for, here's Jason Hoffman breaking down what he thinks you should maybe think of as overs and unders and some predictions for week one. As we know, the regular season kicks off Thursday night as the Buccaneers take on the Dallas Cowboys, won an NFL regular season opener that you kind of can't emphasize just how interesting this matchup could be. All right, Jason, the moment we've all been waiting for, week one of the NFL season is finally here. And we know that means you've got a lot of predictions in store for us and a lot of good stuff. So let's just get straight to it. What do you got for us this week?
All right. So week one, I always feel like it's mandatory to bet on the first game of the year, even though there's obviously no real rules on that. But I don't like the Buccaneers laying 8.5 points. So even though I think they're going to win outright, that's a lot of points to lay against Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. So Thursday night, league opener, first bet of the year. I'm going to say Buccaneers, Cowboys total under 52.5 points. I think the Cowboys defense will be improved, and I don't think the Buccaneers offense is going to pick up where it left off from last year. So I'm going to go under the point total, 52.5 in that game. Now, moving on to the Sunday slate of games, I have a personal favorite betting strategy that I'm going to give our listeners this year.
Ooh.
And it is the weekly home dog special.
Oh, I'm here
so
for this.
So every week, I love doing this because you get a home team that's an underdog on the betting, and it's a game that you can win, and you get some pretty decent odds on it. So this week, for our listeners, I'm going to offer up the Cincinnati Bengals money line plus 155, bet 100, win 155. Against the Minnesota Vikings as my first home dog of the week this year.
Okay.
The line in that game has moved from 3 points to 3.5. So if you like to play with the point spread, you can get that at 3.5 at the Tipico Sportsbook right now. And it looks like it's that way at most sports books. And that comes in at minus 112 on the odds. So $100 would win you 88, basically. But yeah, so that's my home dog of the week is the Bengals to open up with a win. Moving on to the NFC and a place you're very familiar with, the Eagles-Falcons game.
Oh yeah, what you got there?
The point total in that game is 48.5.
Can you and say offense?
Looking at the Eagles offense, I don't know how they keep up their end of the bargain on that. So I'm going to say under the 48.5. I think defense will be good enough in that game to keep the point total under 48.5. But you may disagree with me there.
No, I agree with that simply because I don't believe necessarily in Jalen Hurts yet, and I just don't think Philly can score. I think they have so many questions on offense, but I think the Falcons will score no problem. But I think you're right on taking the under there.
Yeah, I mean, even at 35-13, that still hits the under.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going with there. And then we're coming back to the AFC. In the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Buffalo Bills to open the season. I'm going to go Bills -6.5.
I think that's going to be...
If Josh Allen's going to take the step and be the man, potential MVP look, then he needs to come out week one and beat Pittsburgh by more than a touchdown.
I agree. And if the Steelers are without TJ Watt, that's sure going to be interesting because, you know, the Steelers' chances without him are very slim, especially when you're going up against a potent offense and a quarterback like Josh Allen. I actually think that's going to be one of the top games of the weekend. But I see where you're going with that thought for sure.
Absolutely. That defense would be certainly degraded without Watt there. Mm-hmm. And then last pick this week, again, all of these picks are for fun only and are not meant to be gambling advice. It's just what I'm personally looking at for our listeners. Last game of the week, I'm going to go with fans vaccinated and I believe proof of negative test as well, being allowed to fill the Death Star in Las Vegas for the Raiders. The Raiders versus the Ravens. Now, the Ravens in this game are giving up 8.5 points. And that, to me, feels like a sucker line. I think the Raiders could keep it close, but I think it could also be a blowout. I have no idea. So maybe it's not a sucker line. Maybe I just have no idea. So what I'm doing is, again, very popular this week, I'm going under the point total of 50.5 on Monday Night Football. Because I honestly don't know the Raiders or the Ravens. Do they have any running backs left?
Well, they just signed Le'Veon Bell reportedly to the practice squad. So who knows?
No. Okay. If this were 2015, that would be exciting for them. So I don't know how they score enough points to hit that over. And I have no idea what John Gruden's offense in Vegas is going to look like. I feel like him and Derek Carr are like constantly at odds with each other. And they both put on a hat. Well, Carr puts on a happy face about it. Gruden usually doesn't. But I have no idea what that offense is going to look like either. So I'm going with the under 50.5 total points.
I actually think that's going to be the surprise upset of the weekend. And I think the Raiders fool everyone like they always do, where they start the season off like, oh, we're contenders. I actually think the Raiders might pull the upset against the Ravens at home because I think that's going to be the first time fans are able to pack that place. I think the atmosphere is going to be rocking, and I agree with you about the running backs and the Ravens offense without J.K. Dobbins, without Rashad Bateman, all those playmakers that they loaded up on. They don't have them. So I actually think, heard it here first. That's my prediction. But I agree with your under.
So coming in with a home dog of the week.
I'm coming in hot.
I like it. You can get really good odds on that, too. You could almost get 2-1 or more than 2-1. I haven't looked up the odds on that game because I didn't think they'd win. But there's a bonus one for you, listeners.
Okay, yeah. See, we're all about giving some bonus information. Do you have any more for us?
No. Those are the only things I felt comfortable enough putting out here yet. So,
all right.
Maybe check back on my Twitter feed Sunday morning. I might get some last minute picks in there. Who knows?
Yeah, I'll be staying tuned for that, as Bengals fans should as well, because we know you're giving some great information to all of us. Jason, thanks so much for giving us all we need to know about these overs and unders as we enter what's hopefully going to be an exciting first weekend of the NFL season.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. That was certainly some insightful stuff you gave us. Looking forward to hearing from you next week with your week two thoughts. Charlie, so much to unpack in this episode. We could talk for hours, but we are going to leave it here and we'll be back on Sunday for our post-game thoughts. Are you excited to be finally heading into a game that matters for the Bengals?
I just wish I could be watching NFL Red Zone while it happens, but I guess we have a pretty entertaining matchup as well.
We do.